Thanks for the group making out at 8 o'clock in the morning. This is a high time to be here on a Wednesday morning. So this presentation is actually data from a former PhD student who, of course, submitted the abstracts before he had a job, and his job was industry, so he decided he wasn't coming to this meeting. So we have this. There's a poster I'll talk about later. The data I'm going to be presenting was a part of a larger project, of course, as a dissertation that really got into looking at phosphorus response and other things. But this little aspect, as far as myself as an extension specialist, was a really nice little kind of take-home that we got from the data. So just going to share with this. Just to let you know, Oklahoma's current situation is how we manage. We've got approximately 4 million acres of winter wheat in the state. Half of that is gray. So winter wheat's our primary crop in the state. We have a lot of what's called dual purpose, which you graze during the fall and early spring. You pull the cattle off and take to grain only. Our average yield is in the state average is about 37-40 bushel per acre. Our top end does get into the 80s and 90s, but our average winter wheat producer is growing about a 40 to 60 bushel grain crop. So we're not in an area that has excessive removal on an annual basis. So most of our producers are not operating under a replacement strategy, because even the sufficiency recommendations that OSU use is above removal. And so our traditional practice is still phosphorus rex based upon a sufficiency index using the Malic 3 extraction. And these recommendations are based upon a broadcast incorporated assumption. You know, we're still running off the same rex we've been making since the 80s. Of recent, we've been growing in our grain-only production system as far as no-till. So the acres of no-till are growing, and that may seem odd, but Oklahoma forever was a continuous winter wheat state. So, you know, having a field that had been in winter wheat for 100 years was not unseen. You know, 100 years of winter wheat was just what happened. So going into no-till was a real mentality shift for a lot of the producers, and it was hard as we've gone into more crop rotation and other things. So we've got about a third of our grain-only winter wheat's no-till, and we've really seen that as industry comes in, the land grant recommendations for sufficiency in these production systems are questioned on a regular basis. You're using the wrong recommendations. You know, I'm told on a regular basis that we're costing the producers money because of the way we make our phosphorus recommendations. And that's just what it comes back. And so we took this opportunity with the student to do a couple evaluations. One is in the no-till system as it's growing, how well is our recommendations working? You know, we're now broadcast applying phosphorus in a scenario where we built the recommendations off of an incorporation. And we're also sampling to 6 inches. Well, we're in no-till now. So, you know, where is this coming in? We also took a lot more data and went really in depth on this study, and honestly came out more confused in the end. But where it came up? We went to all on-farm studies with this trial. Pretty simplistic experimental design, rate of phosphorus rates, in four replications, RCBD style, with one OSU rate. So we'd go out to the site, take a composite sample, 0 to 6, make that recommendation, and then also include a rate of phosphorus rates. All was established, the phosphorus established after the wheat crop was established enough, just to ensure that on farm that we were at a location that we didn't have some kind of stand issue, which is very common in on farm research. So this was all applied post-emergence to sort of stand using a triple superphosphate 0460, and these were the rates. Our locations were quite diverse, but within a region of central Oklahoma. Most of them you see are silt loams. The age of no-till ranged from about 9 years to 18 years. Most of them were a rotation, but in probably half these sites, they were still no-till wheat, fall no-till wheat. We've got silt loams. One of the things to note is our range of initial soil test phosphorus levels went from a 1 to a 40 Malic 3, Our pH has had a quiet range, and this is pretty common for that region of Oklahoma to see a mid-4 to a mid-5 in the winter wheat production systems. A lot of wheat that we have in our OSU system is aluminum tolerant, and it's marketed as that. So our winter wheat producers are well accustomed to planting in low pH soils and banding. So many of these fields have been banded with phosphorus in furrow for 10 years. Just getting to some of the overall results, preliminary results, in the yields. For our system, they had pretty good yields running from that 1 to about 4 megagram per hectare. So in our system, in the years that we did this, is kind of tail end of some drought, we had some really good years yields. We have nice ranges, so we did have some responsive locations, and we had, of course, some not. On the right-hand side, you see the range of what we would have recommended as far as OSU soil test. Now, one thing to note is that when we did the OSU soil test recommendation in this, it was just the soil test phosphorus recommendation. OSU has a secondary recommendation in winter wheat production for acidic soils. So if you're producing wheat in acidic soil and you're not liming, OSU recommends the application of 4 kilograms of phosphorus, about 30 pounds of P2O5 per acre applied to alleviate the aluminum toxicity. This is a practice that's been promoted since the mid-80s. And it's a way that our lower yielding winter wheat producers that are on short-term leases can get through some of the aluminum toxicity for a lower cost than lime. And so those with the stars by them are those locations which we would have added, the OSU would have added about 14 kilograms of phosphorus per hectare. And so those are the rates. So we have a nice range of rates of what we would have recommended by OSU, 0 to 40. Now these are really the take-home of what we got as the overarching. You know, we've gone in, we soil sampled every plot beforehand, we soil sampled every plot after harvest, we've got stratification, we've got all this data. The goal of this was, can we predict phosphorus response? That was the PhD's goal. We found out we're not very good at predicting phosphorus response. Shocking, as many of you have worked with phosphorus knows, it's not the easiest task. But as an extension specialist, what I found was really supportive of what we're doing is that the OSU recommended rate, if you look at where they're at, any location where there was a response to phosphorus, our rate was at the maximum part. We maximized yields at all these locations. Now, the phosphorus rate alone did not maximize yields at the low pH sites, but if you added, that's where these orange bars come in at. If you had added the 14 kilos per hectare of phosphorus that the OSU recommends in acidic soils, we would have gotten to that point. So in all locations minus one, and we can discuss that in a little bit, all locations minus one, we were at the top end of the yield, which is a great message for us as land grant extension to have, is that producers, we are not costing you money, which is the worst thing you can do as somebody making nutrient recommendations is costing money. So across 9 locations, a range of soil, initial soil pHs, and range of initial phosphorus levels, we had good recommendations from land grant, which we've been hearing for a decade now that we don't. This is just, you know, I'm much more of a visual person, so this just is able to look at the data a little bit more visual. Our middle sites, so you have our top sites, our non-responsive sites. These first two, you see where our recommendation is. The Stillwater location is an interesting site, a neutral pH, 1 ppm phosphorus, and a site that I have it's very challenging to get a phosphorus response at. And we've been looking at this site for a long time. Now OSU Athletic owns it, and I can't work on it anymore, but it was a really intriguing site while I had it. And we still can't explain necessarily what it was, but it's just not a responsive site to phosphorus. The other locations, you'll see the orange in here, this would be the OSU recommendation, such as this Red Rock. This is the OSU plus the pH adjustment. We are in the top end, and this is a graph that I'm excited to take to our producers and share with them, that you can trust us, that we're not leaving you behind, you're not leaving any yield on the table. with our recommendations. Our nutrient recommendations, what we garnered from this research, is that the OSU recommendations are doing the job of maximizing yield, which is what these nutrient recommendations were built for. They weren't built to optimize anything. They were built to maximize yield and limit risk of loss of yield when they were first established. And that's what they're doing. They're quite accurate in what they can do. They are accurately maximizing yield. The precision of our recommendations, however, are not that good. That's that next step. What can we do about improving the precision of our recommendations? What variables are we using in that? And I'll tell you, the biplot data from this study, so, you know, four replications, multiple locations, biplot data was just, you look at responsiveness, it's just all over the board. Nothing's making a whole lot of sense in it. We're still delving into that information. This data was a part, of course, of a larger project. In that, there's a poster that's up at 2:30, so share this. One of the things to bring out, we of course did what everybody else does. We've documented that phosphorus is stratified no-till, so that wasn't too shocking, and our pH is also stratified. Oklahoma soils are ones that have been recently acidified, so we have acidic 0 to 15 centimeters and a neutral to calcareous subsoil. So we've really, through management, acidified our surface, and our subsoil is neutral, which you can see right there. What I showed in the bottom that I found as much as interesting as anything that I tried to let the student understand what's going on is that our bilocation and biplot phosphorus data had such significant range. So this is just a snippet of one of the locations. If you look at the extractable phosphorus in the different layers, we go from, this is biplot range, at one location, minimum level of 2.2 milligrams per kilogram phosphorus to 41 milligrams per kilogram phosphorus, and that's at a single site. This was effectively the average biplot range of phosphorus at all of our locations. And so we got a student in here trying to figure out how to predict phosphorus response, but we have a 30 to 40 milligram per kilogram range by plots at these locations in an area that's 120 foot by 120 foot. There's a lot of challenges in that. And I think that's something as a community that we're striving towards right now is trying to better understand that. And so for the students out there, I'd say look into that, and it's some exciting work that's currently being done. But this poster, again, is poster number 807 that will be out in the poster hall this afternoon. And I'm done. I've got 4 minutes, and I ended just when I did. Is there any questions that I could answer? Yes, sir.
Did you look at other placement methods?
For this study in itself, no, this study just looked at that level. We've got other work on in-furrow. We don't do a lot of sideband. Our equipment is just not set up for any of that sideband in Oklahoma. It's going to be most of it's all in-furrow. We do have a few people that can run some sideband, but it's typically in-furrow. And we give some recommendations on increased efficiencies in that, but we haven't done a significant amount of rate studies yet to look at rate response in-furrow.
We still have more time for questions.
Yeah.
The
typical products in furrow for this region is 18460. We have two other regions of the state that are primarily using MAP. But 18, and you'll see it in our acidic soils, DAP is dominant. In our calcareous soils, MAP is dominant.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr.
Thank you, Kristen.